When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the award-winning podcast, The Ambitious Entrepreneur Show, featuring business leaders to help you navigate a constantly changing marketplace. Want to become known as a trusted authority while building a thriving business you love? The Ambitious Entrepreneur Show will show you how. Here's your host, Anne-Marie Cross.
And welcome to another episode of the Ambitious Entrepreneur Show, brought to you by the Influence Alliance, the business building community for changemakers. And I'm your host, Anne-Marie Cross. Now, my guest today says charging what you're really worth is the trickiest part of building an online course. And joining me on today's show is Dan Harvey. Now, Dan helps knowledge entrepreneurs scale their business online with their own mobile apps. And his mission is to make the world a more confident and passionate place. And he aims to do that by empowering people to have a greater impact on society. Now, on today's show, Dan is going to share with us how to go from bankrupt to boom in 30 days, learn about the first pancake method, intriguing, and why the future of online courses, not on the web, but rather it's in apps. So welcome to the show, Passion Dan.
Thank you very much, Anne-Marie. How are you?
I'm good. Look, before we went live, as I mentioned, this is such a great topic. Many people, many businesses would have heard of the benefit of apps, but of course now this is your area of expertise, and hopefully I'm sure people will walk away today with a lot more knowledge and insight as to what's possible, what's happening in the world of apps. But firstly, let's dive in a little bit to the intro that I mentioned, how to go from bankrupt to boom in 30 days. Give us a bit of insight into that.
Yeah, absolutely. So we started our company, Passion.io, about 4 years ago. And as you said, the goal of the company, the vision is to make the world more confident and passionate. And we always knew that we couldn't do that alone. And so our goal has always been to empower inspiring people to share their message with more people in a more impactful way. We started, of course, with one client, and then with 10, and we've grown now. We've passed 1,000 clients, and that they're having an exponential impact, helping over 200,000 students around the world. Around the time where we were at around 10 clients, so 10 of these, we call them experts. You know, they're sort of coaches, teachers, trainers, influencers, creators. We had around 10, and one of them was generating the majority of our revenue at the time. And we were very excited because we'd done some big launches, did sort of $500,000 launches, and we started recruiting team members and growing the company. And all of a sudden, the creator that was generating the majority of our revenue decided they were done. They were sort of going into like early retirement. They'd made a bunch of money and they didn't want to do it anymore. And that decision was made sort of overnight, and all of a sudden we had a big cost base and very little revenue from the other creators, and we needed to do something about it. I remember the call with my co-founder Matt, and he you know, where he told me what had happened, and we were talking about, okay, well, what are we going to do, how long have we got, and what have we got in the bank, and what financial commitments have we got. And there's all sorts of laws in Germany as well where we're based about how much money you need to have to be like technically solvent. And he basically said, if we don't do something about this in the next 30 days, we're insolvent. We're done. I genuinely thought it was a joke the first time he said it. Unfortunately not. And I was pretty hesitant, or let's say I was pretty doubtful that it would be possible to, you know, to make anything happen within that sort of time frame. But, you know, my co-founder's a very optimistic guy, and he said, you know, let's just see it as a challenge, right? Let's do what it takes. We'll find a way. And it just so happened we had a conference booked in the States like that week, or possibly early the following week. And we decided, hey, if we go a bit early, maybe we can meet up with some more of these creators and find someone who can, you know, start to replace some of that revenue, and we can, you know, help them build up their online business and then make them successful, which will help us to be successful. Yeah. I remember we were staying in New York in a sort of basement Airbnb sharing a room type setup, and we contacted a whole bunch of these creators and said, hey, we'd like to meet you in the lobby of the Ritz-Carlton Hotel. Met a bunch of these people and said, look, we know we can help you. We've done this before with all these different people. And you know, only one catch. We got to do it in the next 30 days. We can do it for you. We'll do it all on revenue share. You don't need to pay us anything up front. We'll do all the video production. We'll do all the marketing. We'll create the app for you, but we need to do it like now.
Yeah.
And we were very lucky that a coach called Al Cavadlo, who's based in New York, he's a fitness coach. He was up for the challenge. And so a few days later, we rented a location, produced the content. And the week after, I believe it was, we did a launch. We were working through the night to get it all ready. And that launch within the first week made about 30K and then continued to sell very well until today, actually. And it saved the company and it got us back on track. And since then, grown a lot. So,
I mean, there's so many insights from that, but I want to give you an opportunity to share a little bit more about apps, because I'm sure people who are watching and listening today or even the recording are intrigued about that. And by the way, as we know, we're going live, and if you are watching and you have a question, now is a wonderful opportunity to ask Dan, because he's here on the show, and please do that. You just leave your comments. I'll be able to bring them into the show. So when you look back, what are some of the key insights that you learned about looking at that challenge? Because I would say many businesses, Dan, are now in a position where they may very well have taken the time to build momentum, build their business out, started to look at the opportunity of scaling, getting team on board, and then all of a sudden, you know, from one thing to another, their businesses have come to almost a halt, if not a halt. What are some of the key things that you've learned and that you could see were fundamental to you turning that around and getting that back on track?
Yeah, good question. There are a number. A big one is perfection is the killer of progress, or perfection is the killer of done. One of the reasons I was so hesitant that we could do anything within 30 days is that what we had been doing previously would be about a 4-month cycle from start to finish, because we would do like a week of production and we would do, you know, 3 weeks of sort of research in pre-production and like all these things. And, you know, for me, that was my worldview. It was like, that's what we need to do to be successful. And of course, perfection is the killer of progress. And it's one of the key principles we share now with our audience. Now, you know, we've got almost 2,000, I think, experts on the platform sharing their expertise. Many of them, the hardest thing or the thing that they've been trying to overcome for some time is a little bit of imposter syndrome. They're looking out into the world. They see, like, you know, all these huge, I don't know, celebrities or influencers or highly successful people and companies. And they think that in order to do anything, I've got to be like on that level, you know? And of course, those companies, those people didn't start on that level. No one can. So, and that's actually a little bit getting onto the first pancake principle, which is, you know, the first pancake, when you make them, it's pretty ugly, right? It's a bit of a mess. It's a bit like maybe gooey in the middle and burnt on the outside. And the reality is you've got to get through the first pancake to get to the second and third. And a lot of people try and start at the third, just jump straight there. It doesn't work. So I think that would be one of the biggest. And the other wasn't specifically from that example, but definitely for, I think, for your audience right now, we're recording this early 2021. The world has changed and is changing rapidly. And, you know, there have been studies about like what is the biggest success criteria in like in the biggest companies in the world. Is it the team? Is it the strategy? Is it the product, et cetera? And what they've found is more times than not, it's the timing. Do you have the right product for what is happening in the world at that time, the zeitgeist? And something we've learned through the last year and a half, as we've been going through this global pandemic, is we've needed to continuously, like almost on a week-to-week basis, evolve, because the zeitgeist is changing. The problems people have are changing. And if we use the same language in our marketing, if we solve the problem in the same way, and we don't evolve, then we get left behind. So I think that would be the second biggest thing, would be timing and tap into the zeitgeist.
Yeah. And you know what you've just mentioned, those two key things I think are key and are going to be qualities, if we call them qualities or approaches or just part of the culture of the organization. I've had a number of incredible conversations today with other entrepreneurs and visionaries from across the globe. And one of them this morning, Cara Macklin, she's very much a disruptive innovative strategist. And she was saying, you know, for business, is now agility, being able to remain aware of what's going on in the marketplace, be able to shift and move, be able to foresee what is needed, and kind of, as you said, timing, be there to meet the needs and almost get to understand your ideal customer or existing customer far better than what they know themselves. It's like that old analogy I'm sure we've all heard when Henry Ford, back in the day when they were still, you know, horses, ask your customers what they want, and the analogy goes that people would say faster horses, but he thought out of the box, and had he asked his customers, which is always a good thing to do because they can give you great feedback, but you also have to be able to tap in, well, what can we provide, what do we have the ability to do to take this to the next level? And I'd imagine too, I mean, you obviously had a number of team members that you'd onboarded, but you've got a lean team, but a team that very much that approach of that agility and so forth, they need to be on board like that too, don't they? Because if your team drags you behind, you're only as good as the weakest link, if that we can say that. That's true too, would you say?
100%. Yeah. I mean, we're 30 people. And I think the only way to be agile that I've experienced is if everyone in the company has autonomy. Because if everyone needs to wait for the person at the top of the company or the people at the top of the company to have an idea to then distill it down. And then we're only 30 people, so it only gets worse as you grow, I'm sure. If everyone has to wait for that, like one person or small group of people to make a decision or whatever, then of course you can't rapidly innovate. So yeah, 100%, it's all about autonomy and giving people get smart people, give them the right tools to be successful and empower them to make decisions. And if they screw up, celebrate them for trying something new.
I think in that too is something that's so important, and this has been part of the conversation as well. As entrepreneurs, and many of us, you guys, especially in technology and technology-based companies, there are things that they're implementing and trying out that have never really been done before, or stretching the paradigms of what is known to be current operations and things. And within that risk-taking, there's going to be an element of what we might call failure. But I don't believe in failure. It's just, well, that's a way that we know didn't work so well. So there needs to be an aspect from the leadership point of view that we've got to give our team space to be able to run and trial out some of those things, because our greatest idea could come off the back of the back of the back of, you know, a number of those different trials and errors. How, as you as a leader, do you create an environment that encourages that, allows that, but still obviously there's some boundaries, there's some things that you need to keep in place? Is there something that you do strategically or have done, or are you finding that it works really well? Tell us a little bit about, you know, how you manage that team.
Yeah, so we've been a remote team actually for a couple of years already. And so we didn't have that sort of painful all of a sudden going remote when COVID struck. I think this is a really good question for our COO actually, and she's wonderful with this. I think there's two key things that I think we've done pretty well. Of course, we're always learning and improving. I think our team all have very clear remits of what is expected of them and what they are accountable for. You know, in an ideal world, there's no sort of ambiguity. There's no one thing that's owned by two or more people. Like, everything has one ultimate person who is accountable, because if more than one person is accountable, in the end, no one is accountable. So I think that's one thing. The second thing, many of our best or many of our, like, the innovations that we've made have come from, for example, our video editor saying, you know, I saw a comment on an ad that said, you know, for example, we didn't used to have our own app. Like, we launched apps for other people all the time. We didn't have our own app. And I know it sounds super obvious that we should have our own app, but it just wasn't a priority. It wasn't something we were talking about. We didn't think in detail about the benefits of it. And it was our video editor who you know, really pushed for that. And right now we use our app to train our customers, and it's like one of the most successful things we've done. And there are a number of examples like that. And I think that what's really important is holding space for, you know, even though, let's say, it's not really within our video editor's remit to think about should we launch an app as a company, but holding space for that. And one of our values is speak your heart. So we think a lot about how to provide an environment where everyone, we can get diverse opinions on the table. And the goal is to create a meritocracy. It's where the best ideas win, not the person with the most power, not the person with the most years of experience. It's just all about how can we create an environment where the best ideas win. And of course, to do that, you have to have an environment where people feel comfortable sharing their ideas and people have space to do that. So we work a lot on that. Of course, as I say, we're always learning and always improving as well.
And you know what? I think any organization that says, you know, we've got it all handled, well, you know, you haven't created a culture, an environment that you're going to grow, and there will be a time where you're going to hit something and everything comes down. And the fact that you mentioned our COO is probably a better person, it just, that kind of gives an insight. Hey, know where your skills and strengths and talents are.
That's right.
The right people in the right roles, and together create that collaborative environment. And actually, everything that you've said, by the way, some feedback for you is exactly what Cara, the innovation consultant, said. Create such an environment that people share, and it can be. And often people think about innovation as having to be this, you know, next Elon Musk. But if you look at that 1%, if everybody is encouraged, always look at the 1%. What can we do a little bit different or better? Then we're always consistently improving, which obviously is going to ensure that kind of the apps that you create or the features that are within those apps are going to consistently be leading, you know, leading edge for your clients. And of course, now that you've got one too. Now, you already spoke about the first pancake method being about, you know, get out there, don't let perfection get you stuck or keep you stuck. Are there any other aspects and insights around kind of the pancake method that you want to share today?
Yeah, totally. Maybe just before that, if it's okay, I'd love to share one leadership principle that's been like really transformative for me. And maybe this is like super obvious to everyone else, but it is in terms of creating that environment you talked about where people can share ideas and innovate, it's been really impactful. You know, in like from an evolution perspective, status is very important, because if someone has more power than us and they can, for example, fire us at any moment, it's like a survival instinct thing. And so it's completely like baked into us that we, when someone has a higher status, for example, if someone is our boss, a manager in the organization, that we have like a natural sort of defense mechanism around ourselves, because usually subconsciously, we know that this person is sort of in charge of our survival. And so the most counterintuitive thing as a leader, but something I think is very important, is to like consistently reduce your status, consistently apologize when you screw up, consistently say, I don't have the answer. You know, like it sounds, for me, it's very counterintuitive.
A lot of leaders are doing, isn't it? I'm the boss, you need to do what I tell you. And it's as you said, it's really counterintuitive. What have you noticed as you've done that as a leader? What have you noticed in the team?
What I've noticed is that status thing, it will always be there. It's a natural thing. But the more that you can break down your own sort of status, and the more that you can essentially therefore lower people's natural defense mechanism. And by the way, when they do sort of step out of that for a second, even if it's an idea that you think is completely stupid, or if they give you maybe feedback that you think is completely misinformed, it doesn't matter. Like, to celebrate that person, say like, wow, like you just stood up in front of the whole room with the CEO and the COO and you just said, like, that is awesome. it creates that flywheel effect of like, okay, I dipped my toe in the cold water, but actually it wasn't so bad. And now I'm going to dip another one in. So what I've noticed is that people, just people start to step out of that sort of safety zone. And, you know, like a lot of people in big organizations, especially, they have like their work face, you know, and then they're a completely different person at home, a completely different person with their friends. My goal is to have an organization where people don't have that work face. People speak their heart. People, you know, they're not lying at home, at, you know, at night, pillow talk with their partner or whatever, saying something completely different than what they say at work. Because the good ideas, right? How often have you spoken to someone who said like, my boss is an idiot. He doesn't realize that X, Y, Z, but they've never told their boss that because of like, they can't, there's not an environment where they can. Yeah. But it's a good idea. You can guarantee there's merit in that. So my goal is to have an organization where that merit, those ideas can be shared without fear of this issue with the status thing.
But you know what? That's so true. I mean, often then do the owners or the leaders of the business, they implement something and then you've got team in the background going, we could have told them that years ago. And it's like, well, why didn't you? Well, you didn't create an environment that I felt safe enough. Absolutely. And you know what? I love the way that you've kind of modeled that, because even if it is an idea that you think didn't really work, still celebrate the fact that they shared that and say, that's a really great idea. I'm going to table that for a minute. There's ways to approach that, to speak to them that you can still, look, we value you coming forward. Let's put it down. Let's brainstorm around that and see if we can evolve that. We can kind of, you know, whatever it might be, it still rewards the behavior of stepping forward. Rather than, because you got some members in the team who will step out, you know, as you said, dip the toe in the water to see how it goes. And if that gets slammed shut, they'll probably never, ever trust, you know, the feedback that they're going to get. And they'll be in that shell. So that's a great insight. Let's talk a little bit more about the pancake method. And then let's just jump into apps. What's the exciting thing about apps? How can service-based businesses who really are looking at online courses leverage what's going on in the app space? But firstly, pancake method.
Yeah. So the first pancake method, the high-level principle is very simple. It's simply about progress rather than perfection. But we have like a specific sort of 4-week process that we coach our clients through on how to, you know, I told you about that 30-day sort of crunch that we had. What we realized is actually, it's not just us who can create a big success within that time period. We actually refined the process that we followed to the point where now we coach our clients on how to do that, you know, with on their own, so they don't need a team, within sort of 30 to 60 minutes a day. Over 30 days. Essentially there's like, it's in 4 chunks, and the idea behind this the first pancake principle is that a lot of people, they go for like, they want to create this perfect thing, their sort of third pancake straight away, and then they launch it to the world. And what we say is actually launch out, don't even create your product yet, just launch out that you're thinking about or that you're working on a product to help, you know, tell people what, you know, what it helps people to achieve or what problem it helps people to overcome. And just tell the world, you know, through social media, you don't need like millions of people, 5 to 15 people is all you need. Say, look, I'm looking for 5 to 15, let's call them founding members, people who are willing to work closely with me over the next 6 weeks for me to like build up this content and work closely with you and help you achieve that goal, help you overcome that challenge. We encourage our clients to speak to those people on the phone. Ask them, what is your biggest goal? Ask them, what is your biggest challenge right now? Really dig into that, to the user that you want to actually help. And you don't, as I say, it doesn't need to be millions. Once you've spoken to 5-10 people, what you'll learn is the themes are the same. You know, they'll start to use the same language. We had a weight loss product where like after 5 or 10 conversations, because I was doing the interviews, I heard the word, I want to feel sexy in my own skin. I heard that so many times. And it was like a light bulb. Like that's the goal. That's what people want. So you speak to these people, you work closely with them. And then what we encourage people to do is like a bit like the train track method. Like imagine you're a train, you've got like a track in front of you, right? But what we encourage people to do is like lay like the next 7 days of content, the next piece of track, and then roll along that for a little bit and see how it goes. Get feedback from your clients, then lay the next one. So rather than trying to create this perfect thing from day one, create like a little bit, like 1 week of content, give that to your first clients, these first like 5 to 15 people, and then see, like, was it too much content? Was it overwhelming? Did it take too long to do? Was it confusing? Was it too easy? Like, you will learn so much just by giving them something and speaking to them, and then create week two. And what people find is by the time they get to week six, they realize that their idea when they started was complete, like way off the mark. And that's okay, because now you know what the market really needs. You know what really helps people achieve their goal. And then you make your second pancake and you evolve. You constantly improve and evolve your content. And after you do this process sort of two or three times, you have got a product that will stand the test of time, that really helps people. And it sells because you know the language to use. You know that people want to, for example, feel sexy in their own skin. You're not marketing, hey, lose 5 pounds. That's not what they want in that market. They want to feel sexy in their own skin.
Yeah, brilliant. And I love that way as well. And that's something that I've done, and I know my clients have done. And the beautiful thing about that, your program evolves. And you know that the second iteration, the third iteration, because your clients are growing, you're growing as well. And there's certain things, and this is what I think the greatest insight is, the thing that you thought, oh, I won't bother doing that, can often have the greatest breakthrough for your customers. And you think, wow, that's just like that much, you know. But it goes to show, often as especially, I think, experts, specialists in their fields, they forget how far further advanced they are than their customers. And overwhelm can sometimes be one of the greatest things gets stuck to. But they think that the value, that they're not providing enough value, but in actual fact, it's the overwhelm. So getting feedback.
That's right.
So important. So let's talk about, you know, the future of online courses. It's not on the website, you say. It's on app. It's in apps. Speak a bit more about that.
Well, first of all, if you look at like the biggest online course creators out there, like people like Brandon Bouchard and people like Tony Robbins and others, they're still running online courses. Okay. Now, so you might think, hey, this guy Passion Dan is completely crazy. He's saying that like this is the future, but the big guys aren't doing it yet. It's early for Passion. We're 30 people, right? Like we want to, we're 30 employees for 1,000 customers. We want to get to 30,000 in the next 2 years. That's the goal. So when I say it's the future, it is the future. It's not the present for most people. But follow some first principles here. What device are people using for self-development, right? So an online course usually helps people develop in a skill, right? Whether that's language or, I don't know, coding or whatever it is. Most of the time when people are learning something like a new language or fitness or, you know, music or whatever it is, they're using this device, their phone. However, most people are still creating online courses. If you think about any platform where people come back and use it multiple times, like for example, with Facebook, it might be something that people use every day, or maybe with Uber, you might use it sort of once, twice a week. Food ordering services, you know, a couple of times a month, maybe you're using that. All of those are on your phone. You wouldn't go to your phone and pull up facebook.com to scroll your newsfeed, right? It's all apps. It's all like one click, I've got access. And there are a number of features that are only available within apps that also just make sense. Things like you can have like really nice gamification, right? So you can have like leaderboards and you can have progress tracking. You can have streaks. You can have push notifications reminding you, remember to do this, remember to do that. You can have in-app purchases. So you can set it up that people get access to certain content, or if they want to speed up the access, or if they want to get more, or if they want to get more access to you, they one click and bang, they've done an in-app purchase. So you can help, you can take people on a sort of buying journey as well, from completely free product up to something that can be thousands of dollars. So fundamentally speaking, an app is just a much better vehicle to deliver knowledge than a website. Yeah. And what we're seeing in the relatively early stages in the scale of the planet is huge adoption towards running a knowledge business on your phone. I think in 2 years from now, if you play this podcast to people and say, like, you know, it'll be like the most obvious thing is like, yeah, of course, online courses are running apps. Like, how else would you do it, right?
Yeah,
but it's just not there yet.
Yeah. It's interesting you should say that, because I've had a couple of mentors of mine that they offer online courses. You can still access their, you know, content from the web, but it's also available in an app. And what's also in an app is a very easy place where you can message their team, where you can listen to their podcasts. It's all on that app. And it also allows easy messaging for people too. And what I like about that is, I mean, if I have a look at my inbox, it is incredible. I'm almost at a, you know, at the stage where I'm going to have to get one of my team to manage it, because it's getting unmanageable. But when, and you may miss something from an important business partner, or in this case, you know, from a mentor. And so that allows the ability to keep on track. But I know for many people who are listening and watching today, I mean, this may just be the way that you can get ahead, because if you can deliver it in app form and just be ahead of it with everybody else, this whole gamification thing, and we talk about ambitious entrepreneurs. This is ambitious entrepreneurs. So I've noticed it myself, even if it's online, I know what the rest of the video is, but I'm going to let that video keep playing, because I don't want 98% to show. I want the whole thing to go completely finished, complete. There's just little things like that that you can incorporate. Yeah. That encourages the engagement, the consuming of content. And I think that's really where, when we're looking at courses, online courses, we need to also be looking at how can we deliver our content in a way that it does get consumed. And I love the way that you've talked about gamification. That's a whole other show in and of itself. But you're saying that when it comes to an app, you can incorporate those gamification principles far better than and more easily accessible. Is that because of just the features and the functions than if it was, you know, comparing it to online, the website?
Mm. Yeah, and to be clear, online courses have on average 6% completion rate.
Wow.
Which is just awful. Imagine if the COVID vaccine only worked 6% of the time, right? It wouldn't be that impressive. So with an app, really what like social media has done, I would argue in a negative way, but very effectively, is behavioral design. They have tapped into the psychology of how we form habits and how we create addictions, things like how we create things like cravings. Mm-hmm. And they have essentially designed, you know, their platform to trigger certain behaviors for us. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you know, this analogy might not work as well in COVID times, but remember before COVID, when you would get in an elevator and you'd be stood in that, you know, in there with like one person you don't know, right? It's like awkward. What are you going to do? Naturally, what do? We pull out our phone and we start scrolling on social media, because it reduces our anxiety. And that is not the social media platforms. They have essentially designed that behavior in us, that when we feel anxious, when we feel maybe bored, or where we feel a bit scared or whatever, the natural thing that reduces that anxiety is to pull out our phone, and it creates a habit loop. Yeah. So the point here is that there is a whole field of behavioral design that apps have been able to tap into way more effectively than any website out there, simply through ease of access. Mm-hmm. That really like molds our behavior. So our goal is to use those same neurological like triggers, but for something positive. So instead of, you know, another 5 hours scrolling, it's, you know, time to learn a new language, or it's time to learn how to reduce stress, or whatever it is that you're learning.
Mm. With the app that you're talking about, and you know, obviously we're going to share how people can get in contact with you so they could find out more. But if you give an example of maybe some of the clients, or one of the clients that you've worked with that it's worked super well, do you also see some of your clients having, you know, obviously online presence with an online portal where people can access the details, and alongside that, there's also the online, you know, the mobile app where people can access too. So there's a bit of a hybrid model online, obviously on a desktop if they want to do that, and they've also got access to that same content on their mobile device. Is that kind of what you're seeing is working well now?
Yeah, and that's exactly what we do. So if you take our app, for example, it's called Passion Fighters. That's what our community call themselves. And so you can download it on the App Store, Passion Fighters, but you can also go to passionfighters.passion.io, which is like our sort of web version of the app. It's our web app. And you get access to the same content. All the progress tracking is the same. It's a little bit like Netflix. If you imagine like you go on Netflix on your phone, on the app, or whether it's on Netflix.com, if you're halfway through an episode, it's going to know where you're at, and it all talks to each other, right? So yeah, it works the same way.
Yeah, fantastic. And what, when you're thinking about your ideal clients, who are they? Like, who is your ideal client? Share a little bit about them, because, I mean, someone might be watching and listening and thinking, oh, I'm not ready for that. But after you've explained to them, hang on, these are the people that would just beautifully integrate and add well into their business model, could have suddenly go, okay, well, maybe I do need to contact Dan and this team.
Yeah, that's a good question. And honestly, what's interesting is we have a number of different use cases. So one use case, quite a typical one, is that we have people who were running offline businesses, especially knowledge businesses. So people, you know, coaches, authors, consultants, people who are essentially sharing their knowledge in the offline world who want to move online in the most effective way. Another would be creators and influencers. People who are looking to monetize their social media following or their blog or their email list or whatever it is, monetize it both in a way that it sells, so you actually, it converts, right, those people into paying clients, but also it retains them, right? Because, you know, your best buyers are your previous buyers. And if you sell an online course with a 6% completion rate, how many are going to upsell to the next thing? But if you sell a habit-forming learning experience, which is like what Passion helps you to create, you're going to have more engagement, and therefore you can sell more things down the line. You retain people in a subscription. So that's quite another typical use case. We've got software as a service owners. So like people like us, we own a software, right? It's Passion.io, but we use our own platform to actually train our clients on how to be successful with Passion.io. So our app is essentially helping us to increase the retention and success of our clients on our software. And nice. And then you've got e-commerce owners. We've got, for example, a company that sell like exercise bands, and they want to increase how many exercise bands people buy. They want to increase the usage of the exercise bands, and they want to monetize the knowledge that goes with how to use these exercise bands. So they're pairing a physical product with the digital, with the information in their app. So there are about three or four others as well.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Essentially, if you have knowledge that you want to share with people that's going to help them take action and make progress, then your own app can help you do that.
Yeah, brilliant. And obviously, I mean, there's so many different aspects around what you just shared. It really depends on the needs of your business, your ideal client, the outcomes, you know, the goals that you're wanting to achieve. And maybe even there may be some gaps. That's what I love to work, you know, with clients. I'm sure you do that too. There's some gaps. You might find that an app incorporated the right way with the right strategy can really ensure that that gap doesn't exist. It can bridge that gap. And as you say, can take that customer who is not really engaging with your material, but engaging, and not only that, getting such great results that they continue longevity-wise, you know, as far investing in your business. So please, you know, contact Dan, which really just leads me then, Dan. Love today's conversation. Brilliant. We could probably talk for hours on lots of different things about that, but I think people best to reach out, maybe go, and I'm sure on your website you might have some examples. You already got an app there too that I'm sure people can access. What are the best details for them to connect with you?
Absolutely. So you can connect with me personally on Instagram. It's passion.dan. You can, if you drop me a DM there, then you know, and you have any questions, just let me know. And you can also go to our website, passion.io. We have a training on there that might be interesting to some of your audience that's free, that sort of walks through that first pancake method. And also, so that's step one, getting those first clients and getting the app launched. And then step two, people, the next question people have is, okay, how do I get it up to like 100, 1,000 clients? Like, how do I actually do the marketing behind that pulls the people in, converts them and retains them. So it covers that as well. Maybe that would be interesting. You just click free training on the website when you get there, and you'll be able to get access.
Fantastic. Well, look, thank you so much. And for sharing insights too, a bit about, the behind the scenes. I think that's always good. And what I love about those stories is we realize as businesses, you know, we all have our issues, don't we, that we need to work our way through. And we can feel quite isolated that thinks, oh, it's only happening to us. But as we know, businesses around the world, and you mentioned about imposter syndrome, I don't think there is ever a time where anybody, even if you get to the high CEO level, there's always a little bit of, and it's once you realize that everybody has gone through that, it does minimize over the years, of course, but it's just, okay, I'm not on my own. So please contact Dan. As you can see, he's very knowledgeable, and it may just really be something that you can incorporate into what you're delivering that enables your clients to consume the content far better, and also nurture, you know, potential clients through that buyer's journey, particularly if you incorporate some pretty cool things that capture people's attention and gets them, because attention, I think, these days is so fleeting, isn't it? I know myself that if I'm listening to podcasts or videos, I have to speed them up, because for me, people talk too slowly and I know what they're going to say. So it's like, you need to speed your speech pace up, because otherwise I'm already drifting onto my next idea. So these are the kind of things that gamification, it keeps people's attention. So thanks once again, Dan, for coming on the show.
Thanks, Anne-Marie. It was great.
This podcast is brought to you by theinfluencealliance.com. Want to influence real change with your message by becoming known as a trusted authority in your industry while building a sustainable and scalable business you love? Find out how by accessing our free podcast series at theinfluencealliance.com/podcast series. That's theinfluencealliance.com/podcast series.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.